Street Chess Motherfucking Podcast.
Make some noise!
He's a legendary Queens rapper.
He ain't say greet, it's your boy N.O.R.E.
He's a Miami hip-hop pioneer.
What up, it's DJ EFN.
Together, they drink it up with some of the biggest players.
You know what I mean?
In the most professional, unprofessional podcast and your number one source for drunk facts.
It's Street Chess Motherfucking Podcast,
where every day is New Year's Eve.
It's time for Drink Champs. Drink up, motherfucker.
What it good be, hopefully what it should be. This is your boy, N-O-R-E.
What up, it's DJ EFN.
And this is Drink Champs Yappy Hour. Make some noise! Well, when it comes to Mr. Texas, Mr. Houston, Mr. Sideways, the people's champ, the brother has been out here stomping, doing what he got to do, not only of the culture, but he even married into the culture, goddammit. He's done what he got to do. Been out here from Switch the House for him. His tapes with Chamillionaire, and to nowadays is still out here, still doing what the hell he got to do. If you had to get iced out in your mouth, you had to go see him.
Yes, sir.
You mother flippers. In case you don't know the flip I'm talking about, we talking about motherfucking Paul Wall. Now, Paul Wall, I wanted to start from the beginning because other than Bun B, this is our second Houston rapper, correct?
Man, that's what's up.
I believe. Yeah, yeah.
We had Scarface, but I got him sick at fucking my food show. I filming my food show, and then he was supposed to do Drink Champs that night. And I brung him to a fucking restaurant.
He got dirty, sick. Man. You did him dirty.
It was funny as hell because he kept going like making a noise like that. So you know how Scarface is funny. So I'm thinking Scarface is making fun of me and shit. The whole time, this motherfucker's really getting sick and shit. But anyway, I want to take it from the beginning because obviously all of y'all are from this, like, the Swisher House movement, right? So in the beginning, because I heard you used to write Pimp C letters and things like that. But in the beginning, how did you get started? How did you find your love for the music?
Me and Chamillionaire, we grew up together on the same street. I knew him my whole life. We both was introduced to hip hop around the same age, around the same time, through the same era of especially of Texas artists that inspired us. You know, because at that time there wasn't, if we look on the TV or turn on the radio, there wasn't a lot of people from where we're from that were professional in music.
Besides, like a
that.
Rap-A-Lot.
Yeah, rap-A-Lot. Right. Even then, it was like when you're living in Houston and you see, like, you turn on the other. You turn on TV, whatever, you see kind of like how people treat Rap-A-Lot sometimes. We always kind of felt like we got the short end of the stick. Yeah. We being kind of Houston. Mm-hmm. Like maybe being it was so centrally located at the South, at the bottom of the Midwest. You know, we're in the South, but we're far west on the South. So we're kind of removed from kind of what goes on sometimes in Florida or Georgia.
Yeah, we felt
Georgia.
Like that in Miami,
yeah. Right. So it was like, you know, and although we have a lot of similarities, it was like, man, you know, we...
Cause y'all, like, it's like, y'all a different part of the South. Like Pimp said, he said that he considered that the South, like the Texas, because of the different time zone.
Right, right.
Do you agree with that statement, or that was just
wrong? I mean, me personally, I never looked at the time zone as being a reason for where being in the South, because there's plenty of people in the Central time zone. Is you know, Chicago's the Central time zone, and that ain't the South. But you know, it's just more the Southwest. But even then, you know, California's the Southwest. Right. So
because
like,
Texas seems so big, it feels West Coast sometimes. Yeah, you know, you look at it.
And the one thing that gets lost too is that inside of Texas, we all got our own culture. So Houston and Dallas is a lot different. Wow. And if you add in San Antonio and Austin, all four of them places are four distinct different cultures within Texas. Some of the stuff we do share, you know, some of the same similarities.
Austin is a real town? I thought it's only for South by Southwest.
No, I didn't know.
Yeah.
It's the capital, man.
My bad, you were Austin, goddammit.
But imagine growing up in Austin, where once a year it's the biggest music festival ever, and then the rest of the year it's like, well, what's going on? There is events that go on there like throughout the year. Like there's something called Texas Relays, which is like a big slab event, a big car event where we're all... We'll all go there to Austin for the Texas Relays for that. And there's other events, too, you know, throughout the year. And Austin got a dope scene, period, musically, not just, you know, all over music, but for sure specifically in hip-hop. But, you know, just it's a different culture. It's a different – being that it's a capital, being that it's a college town, being that they have the, you know, it's considered the live, they call it the live music capital of the world. Yeah. So the rappers coming out of there, you could tell they're influenced by that. Then you go to San Antonio. San Antonio is a huge military town, basically. So it has its own culture separate from the military, but the fact that there's all these military bases all on, in San Antonio, around San Antonio, all the way to Fort Hood, which is clean. But you have people that come from around the world and grow up in San Antonio, but they kind of like from New York, but they're living in San Antonio because their parents stationed in San Antonio.
I always thought San Antonio was California.
It's a huge. Also, San Antonio is, you know, the first like major city when you come up the from the border, from the Mexican border, right there. Mm. So there's, you know, Brownsville, McAllen, all that, Corpus Christi, and then San Antonio, which is the big city. It's where the, you know, they got, we got a basketball team, there's Spurs. Right. We got the you know, the Oilers used to do their pre-games, preseason out there. The Texans. I don't know if they, I don't think they do, no, but the Oilers used to. They got, you know, in Corpus Christi right there, which is right there where Selena's from. Rest in peace, Selena. But they got the, you know, in Round Rock, all around there, they got the different minor league teams for the Astros. So it's like, it's different than like major big city type of operation stuff that go on, but it's still big city things that go on. So
a lot of money out there.
Yeah. So if you're a producer or you're an artist coming up in San Antonio, you got more of a, I would say, a global influence growing up there because it's people that, I mean, it's like that everywhere, though. Even Miami, it's people from all over the world right here.
Right.
But, you know, it's just when you in school and everybody in your class, their parents are from somewhere outside of Texas, it's like it just gives you a different perspective when you are growing up as a rapper or producer. So they got a dope hip-hop scene. Is, you know, it's different. So each one, then we got other cities like El Paso, which is right there on, you know.
Yeah, rest in peace to what happened.
Yeah, for sure, man. Oh, yeah. Definitely, man. For sure. Thoughts out to all in prayer, man. God rest in peace.
But in 2005, you were signed to Atlantic Records, right?
Yep.
And the debut on that was The People's Chant, right?
Yes, sir.
Then followed by Get Money and Stay True,
yes,
right?
Yes, sir.
How can you compare being on a major to because you went back to independent now, right?
Yeah, for sure.
How, what do you like more than how do you compare?
I mean, the differences I would say is when you're independent, you got to fund everything, and it's a lot more to independent is grind work, it's relationships that either you or people in your inner circle have built on through years, you know what I'm saying? So that's what the independent grind is all about. It's you know, doing the footwork, doing the legwork, just going out there really touching, interacting with your fans, really giving the people what they want consistently. Then when you go to a major label, you know, some people can continue that grind inside the major system, but it's a different, it's like college sports versus major league sports. You know what I'm saying? It's similar, but it's different.
Which you prefer?
I mean, the major, the, when you're on a major label, you got all their resources, money.
Yes.
You ain't got to call nobody. They calling for you. So it is, you know, it's, I would say, being also that I sell grills, and when I was on a major label, I still had independent, multiple independent albums I was getting, collecting money off of that was selling more now that I'm on a major, and I'm selling grills, and I got t-shirt lines, so I got other multiple businesses that are all benefiting from the major
exposure.
Success. Yeah,
right, right.
So I for sure would say I would like the major better, but
yeah, I'm with you on that.
If I'm just an artist,
I hate independent.
Yeah.
Now you got to be built for that.
She was about to say something positive about that.
Well, you know, definitely, you know, it's a if you have a great business mind and you can take the blood, sweat, and tears and you can hustle and not give up and tap out, then that independent is for sure the way to go.
But you still need a staff.
Yeah.
You still need
a staff. That's what get lost too is that when you're independent, it's like some of it works where my manager, who's my manager, is he's been my manager, the only manager I ever had.
Right.
And he's my homeboy I grew up with. And he didn't go to school for management. He was doing something else when I was like, hey, man, I need you to come on the road because I need help, you know. Right. And the reason why I went with that route instead of going with somebody who has a, you know, a diploma,
a
degree.
Resume,
I wanted to go with somebody that I personally can trust, where they have, where I feel like they have my best interests at heart. They come from where I come from, so they share some of the same perspective. They want the same things from me, where when some of the managers, they just there for their money. They don't care if you and your wife stay married. They don't care if your whole hood turn on you and don't care about you and call you a sellout. They don't care about that. They be like, well, yeah, let them call you a sellout. We're getting you these checks. So them things mean something to me. You know, it means something to me to be able to go back to where I grew up and for people to be proud of me to be from there. as opposed to go back to where I grew up and them to be like, oh, he a sellout, man. We don't fuck with him. You know, I ain't, that mean more to me than whatever the check might be, because you can't buy that type of love or respect. And also just, you know, the music for me, this is like, this is a love, a passion for me. So it's my dream job. The only other job I would want, it would be to be a DJ. That's why I started out as DJing, because to me, that was something I seen a career path in being a DJ, where I didn't see a career path being a rapper, because it just ain't that many rappers from my neighborhood. Then eventually, when you start seeing people like...
So what made you start rapping then?
Me and Kameen out doing it for fun. And, you know, we going to school together. We in whatever grade, you know, second, third, fourth grade or whatever, whenever, you know, we beating on a lunch table, we on a school bus, whatever. And a lot of times it came from seeing other people doing it and me thinking, man, they was trash, man. I could put some words together better than that. And then someone maybe called me out. Hey, Pow Wow, what you got? Let me see what you got. And I'm like, all right, fuck it. Let me tell you what I got. And, you know, then the reaction of people, oh, damn, you really good. It's like, oh, shit, maybe I am kind of good. Let me try to do this. But it was never, you know, even up until, because me and Kamina were rapping for a long time before we saw any success. And then when we came into the Switch House, even before that, I was DJing for the Switch House. I was carrying Michael Watts crates. I was passing out flyers. Me and my boy T. Ferris was in the office pressing up the CDs before the same CDs that you buy out the store. We were pressing them up. So I was doing more background work as opposed to just being in front of the microphone and I'm on a you know, on a mixtape. So I really worked my way into the Switcher House. So even becoming an artist in the Switcher House, that was like back then in our neighborhood was like.
That was it. That was like Death Row.
Every car wash, like everywhere.
And you did street team shit too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I could identify
some of
that.
To me was the street team was working for Def Jam or working for No Limit and then Cash Money. And then that's how I got on with Switcher House. And then at that time too with Switcher House, everybody wanted to rap with Switcher House, like in Houston on the north side. So it was like, shit, how can I be? And I seen how Michael Watts, when people start blowing his phone up to get on a tape, you know, eventually he like, don't answer. I ain't answering that shit. But he fuck with me, so I'm like, damn, I don't want him to, if I ask him, I don't want him to turn that off, and then I can't get on no tape no more. I can't get, you know, he's going to be like, oh, I don't come around. So I said, okay, man, I just, you know, work my way in, doing other work. And I actually got on with Switcher House with Michael Watts, because one time I seen him, I'm putting up posters for a Def Jam artist, somebody. I see him at one of the record stores, and I asked him, I said, hey, Watts, man, how come y'all don't never rap on no Cash Money, Manny Fresh beats? Because I just love Cash Money. And Manny Fresh beats used to go hard. And they would never, whatever, freestyle him. And he was like, well, the artists choose the beats, and they just didn't choose the beats. I'm like, man, they tell them they tripping. They need to rap on this beat, that beat. And he just called me out. I was like, well, what would you do? And I just freestyled something. And he was like, come on, let's go. And then we took me to the studio. And
from now, Michael Watts, he died off of lean? Or
no, you're talking about DJ Screw.
Yeah, oh, there's DJ Screw. Yeah,
Rest in peace, Screw.
Okay.
But even then, I mean, it's like a debatable subject. I mean, he did have codeine in his blood, but I don't think that's what killed him. He had a lot of, he had other stuff in it. You know, the lifestyle be what kill you, I think, more than lean. Now, I mean, you know, it's a very touchy subject. And then I try to be respectful of not only him or whoever else, but at the same time, it's a lot of miseducation that people talk about there, like, you know, about fake lean? Facts about lean. Like,
okay. Put us
I
on.
Mean, me personally, I've never seen ever anyone in the history of drink ever die from codeine. Now, is it possible you could die from that? Man, I might be drunked out and then get in a car accident, but is the lean will kill me? You know, or if I sip drink and I'm eating fried foods every day, I'm not drinking no water. Only water I'm drinking is the ice in my cup. I'm not exercising at all. I'm staying up. I'm not getting proper sleep. Everything else I'm eating and putting in my body, not only fried food, but it's some type of trash.
Because lean itself is sugary, right? And then and then you mix it with some other sugar.
Yeah, you
so
mix
is,
it.
Is that like a big part of it?
You know, I have seen long-term people who sip drink long-term. Their teeth might get fucked up, but, you know, a lot of it is just, it ain't like meth, where if you smoke meth, your teeth gonna get fucked up.
Right.
With drink, it's if you sip drink and you don't brush your teeth ever, and you sip drink every day, then you might get cavities. But the same could be said for the soda. And most people that I've heard talk about it, they say it's the soda that fucks your teeth up, not the drink. There's sugar in the drink, but the sugar in the soda is what's really what it is. Now, the thing that I think most people, the most valuable information about any type of recreational drug consumption is that it, you know, it's kind of taboo.
Hold on, I like the way he said it. Recreational drug. Yeah. Something. It makes yeah, yeah, yeah. That was hard.
You know, some of it be taboo to talk about, but at the same time, the fact that we keeping it private is what's causing people to die. Like, some of this, like, you know, if you taking Norcos or Oxycontin or anything like that, or any opioid, and you drinking alcohol, that shit could be deadly. If you taking the opioids and the Xanax and other things, the combination, that shit for sure is deadly. So it's like, you know, it ain't because you know, drink will kill you.
But the lean is an opioid.
You know what was L.E.? Is that when they said that they found Pimp C that he couldn't breathe. I think he rolled over or something like that. I forget. And, like, he couldn't breathe. So they didn't say it's lean. They said that, like, the fact that he sleep apnea or something.
Yeah, he had, for sure, he had rest in peace, man.
Rest in peace. That was my dog.
He had sleep apnea. The doctor told him, you know, his wife, Shannara, she'll say this. When she come on here, you can ask her, she'll tell you, man. The doctor say, you got sleep apnea. You have to have the mask. If you sleep without the mask, you're going to die.
That's just dangerous. Oh, wow.
Yeah, he told him, if you sleep without it, you're going to die. He slept without it. He died. Did he have drink in it? He did have drink in his system. I think they say he had cocaine in the system, too. Right. You know, but you ain't never hear no one say, oh, he died from cocaine overdose. Right. But he had cocaine in the system. Right. They say, oh, he died from drink overdose. The doctor didn't say he died from drink overdose. The doctor said he died from heart or respiratory failure or something, which came from the sleep apnea.
Right. But lean is dangerous because I see so many people, like, so addicted to it. Like, I know people who don't. Wake up and that's what they do.
Some of it is, I think the lifestyle is the most dangerous where the lean is so expensive. So people will get caught up in sipping lean and then they fucking their money off. Now, it ain't like to the point where people is breaking in their mama houses, pawning TVs to go buy a drink, but they will, you know, I'll see people fuck off a lot of money on the drink. To me, what's dangerous about it, the absolute most, is the fake drink. When they be playing with the drink.
Yeah, we had 2 Chainz talking about it. He was breaking down all the fake stuff.
Right.
Yeah, that shit is the most dangerous because, man, you don't know what you're sipping.
Yeah,
you know
what are they doing when they making the fake shit?
Man, they need to stop doing whatever they doing, man. They need to stop. But I don't know. I don't know if they whipping it up in their garage, like, you know, or if it's something they just...
Because they don't brew this shit?
Man, I don't know what they doing, but it ain't drink. You know, it's maybe whatever they... I don't know. That shit... To me, is what's the dangerous shit though is when they sip the fake drink because you don't know what you sipping. It's just like when you got pressed up pills. You know, when pressed up pills is dangerous, man. You know, one little grain of fentanyl more than you're supposed to have will kill you. You know what I'm saying?
Is the activist still floating around or no?
You can Google this. They stopped making activists in 2011.
So someone has activists right now. It's fake? It's real, but
man,
they...
if my mama had activists right now, I'd tell her quit playing, it ain't no real. Is it possible? I mean, this the scam.
Right.
I got all this fake drink. Right. I come to you and I say, hey, I got a homeboy in Kentucky, his grandma owned a pharmacy, they ain't sell this shit, they ain't never get rid of it, and we got a stockpile of it. It's the real shit. Man, I can get it to you, whatever. I don't know. I'm going off of what you're saying. You know, you completely scamming me or somebody scam you, so you really believe it. Mm-hmm. And then that's the thing is that, I can tell you, you know, that's what they say. It came from the Midwest somewhere or somewhere like that where if some came from a pharmacy in Iowa, how can I verify that?
Right.
I'm in Houston. Or, you know, if it's come from anywhere, I can verify.
Who's the first nigga
Where did that come from?
Hey, I'm high.
I don't know who the first to ever come up with this.
1871.
God bless whoever. We need to make that a public holiday.
Who is that nigga? Who the nigga that thought of the dong? Yeah. That nigga just said, yo, you know what?
Yeah.
I'm gonna take the rest of this shit out of here.
Yeah, just
and we're gonna put shit up your ass. Because it works. It works, thong guy.
The other thing they'll do is they'll say, oh, I know somebody who used to work at activists, so they know how to make it. They can get the chemicals online and they can make it. They know how to make it. It's the same thing. Man, it ain't the same thing. And they ain't used to work at activists. They sell a fake drink and they just need a story to sell it. Then the other thing they'll say is, we got the pharmacies in the Midwest.
Uh-huh.
We got somebody used to work at activists. then it'll be just things like that. Or I know somebody who can create it, or I used to have it, or my homeboy just got out of jail. This smoke kicking in. I just got out of jail. Or my homeboy just got out of jail. He had these pints at his mama's house, and he want to sell them. You know, but it'll be, what, he got 100 pints? Because you've been selling them same pints for months now. Shit, like, damn. But, you know, the scams on the fake drink on how it's real is just, man, it's ridiculous, though. But, you know.
Well, big up to Shine Papers. Big up to Smoke Champs.
Smoke Champs, baby.
Big up to 220 Miami and Nine Lives Collective. And, you know, big up to people with Cherry and, like I said, Shine Papers and all that. But, all right, so Swizzle House now pop.
But go before that. Okay. Because I want to go back to when Screw and them started making the tapes. That was all based off of lean culture as well, right?
I mean, it was a part of it for sure. You know what I'm saying? But it was like, it's like when you make a club song. It's not, you know, the alcohol has something to do with it. The alcohol go with it. But you can make a club party song and you don't even drink.
It's, so the slow down music wasn't because of the...
For sure, that was part of it. You know, I think
if you were sober as fuck, I'd be like, what is going on?
Well, I grew up, and I didn't smoke or drink growing up until I was older. So I grew up appreciating, and to me, it was the greatest music on earth. So, you know, you can still appreciate it, you know, I think without that. But I think in the moment of creating it and all that, and I created it too before I was slowing music down, DJing like that, before I was really like leaning.
What do y'all actually do to slow it down?
There's a, pitch it down,
right? It's different
pitch.
Now. Now it's like a... It's, but in the it's a, now it's a plug-in.
But with records, they just, the pitch was all the way down. Yeah,
you slow it down. Live, how, man, it would be all...
And that was just a Houston thing, or like... because
you know, back in those days, it's funny because there was a DJ in Florida who would make mixtapes too slow down, but he wouldn't... They wouldn't chop them up and
not
mix them cut and scratch.
In Miami?
I think Florida, Lauderdale, maybe.
Oh, okay.
But it was like a pretty big...
Because everything here, we speed it up.
Yeah.
You know, you jam Pony Express and get a style DJs.
I remember I came down here in like 98, 99... for something that was going on and with my Jamaican partner, and it was like all... You know, it was going down. It was all up-tempo... You know, and then we passed by one person. I hear somebody jamming Screw, and I'm like, oh shit, they must be from Texas. And then that's how I found out. Like,
they fucks with it. We fucked with it out here. But since we sped it up out here, we was like, how the fuck do you listen to this?
Yeah.
Because everybody's doing cocaine out here. Yeah. So if you think about it, it kind of makes sense.
Yeah. Right.
We're sped up out here. Right. You know, Caribbean vibe.
So that slowed down
sounds a little better. Right.
Some of it in Texas, I thought about it. Some of it in Texas, we spread out. You know, so we got, you know, you got to have a car to get from point A to point B or whatever. You got to have a car. Whereas, you know, it's like that in a lot of cities as well. Yeah. But, you know, it's also not like that in a lot of cities. So we spread it. You got to have a car. A lot of people take better care of their car than their house. So we're going to make sure we have mute, you know, there's bass in the trunk. So then that leads to there being bass in the music. Because when you're an artist, too, you're like, they ain't playing my shit if it ain't got no bass in it. So let me make sure it got a lot of bass in it. Then it's hot as fuck. So, you know, shit's slow like that. Then the swing and all of that, the driving slow, it really traditionally, like in the car-wise, came from the streets being fucked up, there being potholes or whatever. Man, if I'm in this car, I ain't finna fuck my rims up. I'm going to drive slow. I'm going to swing around them. And then it became like a tradition or
the
just,
spokes on y'all rims when they
stick out.
The
wire wheels. Yeah, so.
That's for niggas not to come close to your car? That's like the style.
This is the style. Okay. Over the years, they've gotten wider. Okay. You know, when they originally came out in 84, they didn't stick out past the fender. Right. But just, you know, as time went on, the technology got better. The rims got improved from going from aluminum to steel. So, you know, they don't get dent up as much. They don't fall apart like they used to. It's it just then got upgraded, updated with the times. Because we'll drive right next to each other and be looking like we about to crash.
Right,
you know, it definitely take a seasoned veteran driver. You got to kind of hold your nuts when you're driving.
Huh.
You know, some of that is what it's been. At the same time, you got to kind of be, you got to be focused. You can't be on your phone, all that kind of shit. You got to focus because you for sure
crash. What's candy paint?
For sure. That's the, you know, that candy. Okay. That drip, that wet. Yes, sir. Shout out to House of Colors. You know, that's something, man, you know, car lovers around the world. It's funny because a lot of the car cultures outside of Houston don't fuck with the poking rims.
Right.
They like, man, they don't fuck with the poke. They'll be like, oh, yeah, your car clean, but the rims look like trash.
Mm-hmm.
So they really don't, man, especially, like, it's funny, like, all my brothers in California, they be going at it with all my homies from Texas, where it be like, shit, because the cars be a little bit different. But car lovers everywhere, you know, they got love for that candy paint, man. When you got that paint that's so wet, it look like a Jolly Rancher, the paint that look like, it look like you just sprayed it with a water hose, you know what I'm saying? That, man, it's just something about that, especially when it's clean. You got candy paint and it's dirty. Man, I'm the definition of riding dirty, man. my shit be so dirty, but, man, when that shit be cleaned up and you looking good, man, ain't nothing like a wet candy car, man. It ain't nothing like a slab on candy, man, for sure.
Now, how'd you get into grills? Because most rappers, no one is thinking like that. Like, how did your mom even, like,
man, part of that? The culture to start with.
Every business I got into, it was, I want that. How can I get it cheaper? I can get it cheaper if I sell it than if I'm just a customer. So how can I sell it? And then let me learn the game. Whatever, any business I have or have ever had. So with that, it was, I always wanted one. I wanted a grill, but you know, in the South, it was always permanent grills. You know, you would go to a dentist to do the grills. And then, you know, you couldn't get no removable grills, nothing like that. That's what we would always see and shit everywhere, period. Right. And then all of a sudden, we see Wu-Tang on the videos taking their grills out. We like, man, what's going on? How they do that? I want one of them grills. We ain't had nothing like that.
Yeah, permanence.
Yeah, permanence. Yeah. So then, you know, my boy Crime came from Brooklyn. He came with the removable style grills to Houston. He's still selling grills too. He like a traveling grill salesman. He go all around the country, all around the world selling grills. But he came to Houston to our neighborhood selling New York style grills, you know, removable grills. And they was cheaper than the other grills. We like, man, what's going on? These some flea market grills. These some, like, beauty shop grill, wig shop grills. Or what's going on? Because, you know, you can get the one little tooth to come on. Like, we ain't talking like, we talking about, like, the custom removable, all of that. We like, man, hold on. Everything he had was just some next level different shit. And I would always see him because at that time, too, I'm passing out flyers, promoting at clubs. And then I, bam, see his flyer on the car. So I bump into him. He see me. He like, man, oh, you the one who been passing out these flyers. And I'm like, man, you the one who's selling grills. And he like, I just straight up told him he wanted me to work for him doing promotions. I'm like, bet, I want to work for you. But shit, I need that wholesale price. You know, I ain't going to start my own store without you, nothing like that. I need it for my own personal use. So he hired me to promote, had me promoting for him. He actually had me running a store selling grills. And then that's how I got my first set of grills.
And you know how to make grills yourself?
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know.
Yeah. Get start to finish from, yeah, from taking your mold to casting the gold.
Get the fuck out of here.
I can't front. If I get you a grill, like your grills, Johnny made them.
Okay, all right, cool.
Give me on the verse, so don't give me on the. I'll take your mold. Let me take your mold. Right. And I'll let Johnny say that. I'll let my boy Jesus say the diamonds or something, man. You know, but man, from there it was my boy Crime. He had me up under him. And then eventually he brought me to Johnny, where we was just salesmen. Johnny made the everything from scratch. And
oh, wow.
At that point, Johnny was, you know, on his rise to stardom, you know, being a grill maker. Right. And then he like, man, you know what? It's about time for me to get a store. That's right around the time when we linked up. And then we just kind of took it to another level. And then him being a Vietnamese immigrant, it'd be tough sometimes, man.
Yo, I'm going to tell you a story. This is like one time I hung out with TV Johnny. He's one of the motherfucking most, you know, he got the illest accent in the world.
Accent, bro. Yeah, bro.
So
that
he said to me,
tough, bro.
So I had just, we was in LA. I was with Spiff TV. And I think we were shooting a video for these people, Mastercraft. So TV Johnny comes, Johnny Dane comes to, I think we were filming in the Roxy in LA on Sunset. So I'm like, yo, I'm mad happy. I went to Watts, I went to Compton, I went to Inglewood, I went to all these hoods in LA. So the whole time I'm saying, man, I just went to all the hoods in LA. TV Johnny looked at me and said, man, that's no hood. Yeah. I'm from Vietnam. They eat my dog.
Yeah.
I said, shit.
Yeah, Johnny said, no electricity, no water.
I'm trying to identify what the fuck is being hood and eating his dog.
Yeah.
So I'm like, because I was like, you can't just tell me some shit like that and just move on.
Yeah.
I need to know why you just said that. He said, man, I had my pet one day. I said, your pet? I said, yeah, man, my dog. I went to the store. I leave him outside. said, take him. And I said, what? And then later on, he said, they gave me a plate of food. I eat my dog with them.
Damn. Damn.
I said, DJ Jelly, that's the wildest story I ever heard.
Yeah,
but I'll never forget it.
We went to Africa. We were in Sierra Leone. We was in the village. And he was like, oh, this remind me of this. We say, this remind me of my hood. This where I'm from. He like, hey, this is shit.
He felt comfortable and shit.
Yeah, right. He like, man, it's just like Vietnam.
Oh, that's
like
right.
Vietnam.
You went, well, Tego Calderon, yep. And y'all went to the actual Raekwon. Yeah, how was that experience?
Man, it was so dope, bro. Just like, you know, first of all, going over there, going to Africa is something that's like, man, that's the motherland.
He's going to Africa tomorrow. Tuesday.
Yeah, bro,
he's going
to Africa. Enjoy, brother. Hey, enjoy. You're gonna love it, man. Everything pure there was like just being there was just a whole experience, breathing in the air. I'm taking it all in, you know.
Sierra Leone, this is where the people get, got one hands from like the diamond.
The diamond.
Blood diamond.
That was the MTV joint y'all did?
Yep. Yeah, yeah,
that's what MTV, right? Yeah. Blood diamond! I don't know why I keep saying that. Blood diamond! I don't know why. It keep coming out with me.
It was crazy, man, when Raquel, when she came to us, to do it, my boy T. Ferris was like, man, I don't know if we want Pow Wow to go to Africa. He's going to come back with a dashiki. He ain't going to have no grill. He's going to take his grill out. He ain't going to be on the same. He's going to be a different Pow. Because everybody always, you know, think about Dave Chappelle when he went to Africa and then he turned down $50 million. Right. So that's what he said. You're like, man, I don't, if that $50 million come, we need to sign the check. Right. You know, but I was just like, nah, whatever it is, you know, even if it do transform me personally. And also being at a time when I just had my son. So it's like, it just puts the whole world in perspective. Yeah. You know, just especially growing up in Houston, leaving Houston to go to other cities and then going to other continents and other completely different worlds. You know, it's an amazing thing this is my dream job, man. I appreciate every second of all of that.
That's real.
Then to really be educated on the diamonds and all that. Things I ain't know about.
Yeah, so put us on. What did you learn out there?
Like, okay, first of all, it's just corrupt as fuck. Just like it is everywhere worldwide, you know, shit, and man, people being exploited. All the stories you hear about Africa being exploited for their resources, that shit be real talk. Right. Like, people don't be understanding that this is a world where every human came from. And now it seems like every other country and continent has exploited it in one way or another.
And continues to.
Yeah, it continues to. So, man, with the diamonds specifically, okay, they had a civil war in the 90s where it was, it was crazy. And like a lot of, they got the movie with Leonardo DiCaprio, Blood Diamond, which kind of talks about, explains some of it. But, you know, it would be basically rebels who would take over the diamond mines and then trade the diamonds for drugs or trade them for guns or things like that. And it was some crazy shit. Child soldiers out there, you know, like 13, 14, 15 years old soldiers. And, you know, they would come in and, you know, completely destroy a village.
Kidnap
the kids.
Yep.
And then put the cocaine in the coffee of the kids and drug them and brainwash them into thinking somebody else did it.
Did it make you look at diamonds different?
Oh, completely. Right. For sure. First of all, you know, things I didn't understand, what the Kimberley process, where if you buy a diamond, if I'm a jeweler and I go buy my diamonds wholesale, it needs to be registered through the Kimberley process. Now, what that means is when the diamond is mined in the mine, and they got different mines. They got like Flintstones looking mines, just like a big ass pit, and they got these big ass machines. And then they got the water mines where they out there sifting in the mud.
Oh, yeah. Like the gold shit.
Yeah.
Back in the day.
Yeah. So there might be more, you know, caves and others, but what we saw, that's what I saw. So they, and when they mine, basically everything from who own the mine, who's actually mining, it's like labor laws. Like a lot of this shit is corrupt. So they'll pay, man, they would get like a dollar a day, some shit, 90 cents a day, and a bowl of rice. That was their pay for being out there in the mud sifting through the diamonds. That ain't right, 90 cents a day, and you know. So things like that where, you know, there's not like labor laws on that type of shit. You know, it's crazy, man, to see that it's like this. And then the crazy perspective is just living in this civilization, Western civilization, where you're taught that, you know, the diamond is, you know, that's a symbol of success. That's a symbol of achievement, of pride to show off. But then to see when you trace back where it came from all the way, and not all diamonds are mined like that through child labor and things like that. But the ones that are, it's like, it just makes you think about, oh, like, man, what is it really worth it? You know, who is getting paid off of this? And then you see, right. You know, so that's why for me going out there, it was important that Johnny came with me, because I'm like, bro, we got to come out there, because it's certain things on the business end that I don't know. I don't, right. You know, the people that, you know, he the businessman when it comes to negotiating all that type of shit. I'm the marketing person where I'm the face of the company, you know, so he, right. He do what he do, I do what
did
I do.
Did y'all change anything you did based off that trip? Like how you bought the diamond? Yeah.
Off top, before that, we, you know, we didn't even know of the Kimberly process. Right. So all of that, you know, and then, of course, Johnny being from Vietnam, where the country, the life, it was the same. It was a lot similar to what we saw out there. Right. It touched him as well. So for sure, off top, we switched our diamond wholesaler up and made sure they were going through the Kimberly process. The ones before, now let me say this. Now, what the Kimberly process is, let me finish it. When you mine, you know, when you mine a diamond, you have to, you find a diamond, you got to, you know, if I own the diamond mine, I got to get each diamond registered. Then when it's sold, whoever it's sold to, there's like it's got a number registered to it, so it can be tracked where exactly it came from. Now, it's, you know, with anything on the black market, you can, your diamond, when we out there, people in the hotel, like, hey, you need some diamonds? And I'm like, man, I'm just like, damn, that, like, man, that'd be... I'm just tripping like to myself, thinking like, man, what type of person would
like
I be?
Like, nigga slinging weight.
Yeah, I'm out here getting the plug on the diamonds. I'm glad we wasn't out there to get the plug on the diamonds. We out there to try to understand, or, you know, I think it would be kind of like, I mean, I can't say like we can change the world or we could change it, but we personally have to make a change. You know,
be responsible for what you're doing.
Yeah, for sure.
Let's make some noise for that. Yeah, that's real.
That girl won no jewelry after that.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, like, yeah, she didn't win nothing at all after that.
The whole experience out there, bro, it was everything, you know, of, you know, we got the UN escorting us.
You met all the mutilated kids also, I think?
We met some of them. There's like a village, too. Like, it's you know, you see kind of like, growing up here, man, you know, Well, first you taught that everything is perfect, and then you realize it's all lies and bullshit, and then later on you realize the whole world is like that. Yeah. You know, that's kind of how it was for me. It was like I grew up thinking that, oh, America's great, and then you're like, damn, this shit's fucked up how it happened or how it still is. And then you go out to other places in the world, and you're like, damn, the world really fucked up how we treat each other, man. Yeah. This shit's crazy, man.
So let's take it back, right? You and Johnny, you link up. The guy Crime links you up with Johnny, right? All right. And Johnny's already doing it. He's already.
Johnny was at that time. This is Johnny's basic story. He came from Vietnam. Johnny actually has a crazy story within his personal family. His uncle was a general in the army in Vietnam.
The communist side or
no? The other side is down with America.
Okay.
His uncle escaped from Vietnam. He was in jail. He escaped as a prisoner of war. It took him 18 times. On his 18th time, he finally escaped and made it to America, got a political asylum, everything here.
Wow.
And then one by one, his family would come over. Johnny made it here when he was young, I think just out of high school. Like he might have just graduated, like sometime around like that. And he went to school. He started off doing jewelry repair. His first 6 months here, I think he said he made $500 his first 6 months. And he was like, man, this is... the greatest in the world. Like, it was like
Vietnamese people work hard, you know, as a community. Like they work. Hard. Has he gone back to Vietnam since?
Yeah, a few times.
I tried to reach out when we did. I also went to Vietnam. We did a film out there. I was trying to reach out to him to be in the film.
Damn, we should have went.
Yeah,
it's already out.
I mean, I just wanted to get like an interview from him about. It's already done, but I mean, I want to go back, man. Yeah. We loved it, man.
Part two, man. Oh, shit. Yeah, we looked that up for sure. What's it called?
Huh? Coming home Vietnam. Oh, thanks a lot, buddy.
Coming home Vietnam.
Yeah.
That's what's up. We got to check
now,
that out.
Now, back in the days, they used to have, they used to say, who is Mike Jones, right? Now, where is Mike Jones at? Where is that nigga at, man?
Man, your guess might be as good as mine, man.
Maybe the number still works. Call it.
Word, the number, right?
Yeah.
Man. What happened?
I think the phone company actually, like, tried to sue him because of that number, because they, like, man, He don't have it no more, so whoever has it, like, they can't use it as a number. You know what I'm saying? Like, because it's, they get, whoever it is, like, right now, it's people texting, calling, this is Mike Jones.
So that's your phone. He's
like, nah, damn. But, hey, shout out Mike Jones, wherever you at, man. We wish you the best, man. Yeah, shit, you know, hey, what's up, man? Yeah, what it
this,
do?
This
wish
you the best, number love. Y'all got Slim Thug, Bun. Y'all got you got who else you got?
Zero. We got my boy Trey the Truth. We got
ain't Megan Thee Stallion from y'all?
Megan Thee Stallion. Shout out Megan Thee Stallion. Lizzo. Lizzo from Houston too. Travis Scott. Sauce Twins.
Travis Scott don't remind me of none of y'all niggas though. That nigga's out of it. That nigga's not from Houston.
That was kind of ill about him though.
That's what's ill about him. He definitely from the moon.
And
he gets the biggest tribute though when he does it. He definitely
Yeah. I think about that too because you know throughout the years there's been other artists that have come out of Houston that didn't come with the traditional H-Town sound. You know what I'm saying? But he for sure took it to another level. But I think you know what his style. He has more of a, like a, you know, I think he's kind of affected the, it's, you know, I have a bias being from Houston, so I'm going to look at him like, oh, yeah, he Jesus, you know, like, shit, he God, you know, but, because he's, because he's successful, so I'm rooting for him. I want to see all these accolades, but, you know, just seeing, just how he do his thing with the production and the rap, and then for him to, man, he on Saturday Night Live.
That Kardashian sex bring you right to the top. Bring you right to the top, baby.
Hey, shout out to the Kardashians. seen them on Saturday Night Live, though, with DJ Screw in the background. Mm-hmm. Them type of things, it's like, man, you know. Crazy. And that kind of just goes to show, like, you know, even from Houston or wherever you're from, you know, from Houston, we got a wide variety of flavors. You know what I'm saying? We do have our best-selling flavors. But we got a wide variety of flavors.
I even got Beyonce.
For sure. Shout out Beyonce. Y'all win.
They got Beyonce.
Yeah.
And I wanted people to know that Paul Wall said he's not drinking today. So I am not drinking today. Yeah.
Smoke chance.
God damn it. Smoke chance.
The EFN is
going in. And I respect that. So, you know, some people come on here and they don't drink and they act like they drink it sometimes. And I, you know, I don't like that.
We don't promote that. I don't promote that. I'm telling you. We'll drink.
You know? I want to join my guests. Now, we have guests that don't come on or don't smoke or drink, but it's because, like Joe Button, we had Joe Button on. I'm saying his name right?
Yeah, Royster 5'9".
Royster 5'9".
Yeah.
Because they was both, they both felt like they were Akon.
Yeah.
Well, not Akon. Royce and Joe. They felt like they were addicts at one point, and that's the reason why they don't indulge anymore.
Which is I'm even not an addict. I can quit anytime I want.
Right. So you don't still fuck with Lena, do you?
Huh?
Or do you?
I mean, you know, it's when you get older and then being a parent and then being a role model and actually seeing kids and then also having conversations with other artists and CEOs from Houston from the eras that raised me and having them type of talks with them, it give you a different perspective on the influence where if I talk about it in a rap or even if I make a whole song about it and I'm wearing a activist shirt or something.
Because you had the cup at one point,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, for sure. I still got it. But okay. It's at the jewelry store. Some of it is like, man, how much of it is it just representing the culture or when does it turn from that to promoting the culture and promoting the misinformation of things, and then, you know, it's like, man, we got parents on there trying to ban, boycott us.
But what do you feel about those kids that get on the internet and they like this? They look like they're going there, and they can't stay up. Like, that's like heroin, right?
Yeah, some of it is, but I mean, a lot of, you know, I think most of them not sipping drink, though. I think most of them is taking somas and popping pills and other shit.
Yeah, they probably adding pills for sure. It seems like that.
But, you know, and that's the. It definitely, at some point, it went, because it's so funny, man, growing up musically in my musical career, or when I signed to a major, or whatever, you go around the country, we sipping, drink, we asking, hey, you know what's been drinking, whatever, and then I just, you know, certain places I'll go, I remember being in places, and there was some very high-powered people in the room, and we sipping, drink. They looking at us like we complete crackheads, and I'm like, damn, they looking at us like we crackheads, but they was snorting cocaine. So I'm like,
they doing what's crack made out of.
Yeah, and we just like, damn, it's just funny to see like how drink has just globally become accepted now. You know, like it's rapid. Like I look on Instagram, it's rappers in Africa talking about sipping drink, and I'm like, damn, they got man, it's going down. And it's other thing, like I got a homeboy from Poland. I went to Poland. He like, I got a present for you. What's up? It's some Poland drink. I'm like, damn, what's going down?
What the fuck is that like?
You
know, and for sure, anytime we go to Mexico, we always, you know, in La Farmacia, like where the Codina, you know, but they make it different all around the world, you know what I'm saying? But it is drink, it is cough syrup all around the world, you know.
If you had one song to represent your whole career, like everything, just one song to represent Paul Wall. What would that song be?
Man, that's a good one, man. Shit, dude. It's definitely been a journey, a career, man. This is my dream job, so I look at this as my career. Like, shit, every aspect of whatever, even if it parlay into other businesses, this is my dream job, dream career. I'm going to do this as long as I'm able and capable, man, you know. So, I don't know. I think, you know, for sure, I would maybe say drive slow because, you know, it's a marathon, not a sprint. So, I'd say maybe drive slow would be my
song. What artists from the town inspired you, and then from outside the town?
Both. For sure, Lil Kiki was my biggest inspiration. He, you know, I grew up on the era, the screwed up clique. Everybody in the screwed up clique.
Not Kiki, who Drake talking about?
No.
Come on. You know these little niggas out here, man? Yeah, they crazy. You know what I mean? They'll start running with the moon. It'd be memes and everything. Look, you know what I mean? This is why it's Drake.
We gotta clean it up.
I'm sorry. So Kiki.
Lil Kiki, he's basically the originator of a lot of the Houston culture, especially when it comes to rapping about the culture, putting on, you know, having him, you know, I'm sure he'd be an incredible guest because he can give, you know, all kind of background history. You know, it was him, Fat Pat, and DJ Screw where it started off. And then, you know, there was definitely people involved. Like,
shout out to OG Ron C as well.
OG Ron C, what to do, for sure. Mm. There was people involved, like, in the streets, like Corey Blunt, who was, like, a key figure where he, you know, the cars, he was, you know, one of the people in the streets making the money. So he had his cars, right? So it was, like, an inspiration for everyone. You know, the way we do our cars now, was all of, you know, he inspired me for sure the most. He was my favorite rapper, still is. He was the greatest rapper to me, still is. You know, his wordplay, the things he would say, also just representing, putting on for the Houston culture, being that he was somebody I looked to. He was from where I'm from the city I'm from. He represented where I'm from, where I looked to him as being somebody, you know, up high, who's professional, who made it, who's elite, you know what I'm saying? He from where I'm from, shit, that's exactly who I would want to be, you know. Definitely he's my favorite.
Now you got,
but he didn't answer it from outside. Who inspired him from outside the town?
Okay.
Inspire, I would say maybe BG. Maybe.
You did say he was.
Yeah, Hot Boys for sure. BG was my favorite. BG and Juvenile, they was my favorite. BG for sure. I think I had the best collection, the biggest collection of his music for sure. That was shit. Even though I maybe didn't pattern my rap style off of him, he definitely inspired me a lot. Just a lot of that too came from the locality of where he from. You know, any local rapper, they my favorite rapper, man. Snoop Dogg, it don't get more local than that. He Long Beach for life.
Right.
But he's global.
I get what you're saying.
You know, any
local, global.
Yeah.
Global. I got to understand.
But, you know, all the local rappers always are my favorite. You know, when you ascend with your, you know, career, they want you to be more mainstream so more people can fuck with it. But sometimes you lose your localness, but the local rappers are always the dopest to me, man, and my favorite.
Now, you got, like, the Eminem pass. Like, what I mean by that is, like, you know how most people, they'll be like, oh, Logic is dope, but then they'll say Logic is dope for a white guy.
A white boy, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And then they'll say, you know, MC Search is dope before a white guy. I don't hear people say that about you. Like, I hear people say Paul Wall is dope, and I hear people say Eminem is dope.
Yeah.
Like how does that resonate with you?
I mean, I'm very grateful that people appreciate me in any capacity. If they say, I eat dope for somebody to wear a hat, you know, so even that, you know, it's like, shit, hey, at least they think I'm dope. Because, you know, I got bullied, I got picked on. So, I'm glad I got friends now. You know what I'm saying? Even if they fake friends, I'm glad I got I got my real friends. Shout out to my real ones, man. Hey, what's up, Pierre? Shout out to my boy Pierre out there. Goo, what's up, Goo, T-Fair? All my real ones out there. But, you know, it's funny because we'll think about, like, me and my boys, we'll laugh about that, like, when they had, like, the top 10 greatest white rappers ever, and I ain't on the list, top 20, top 50, and we'll be like, damn, I know I'm better than some of them, but, you know, it's like, okay, how should I don't know.
Now, we traded you a long time ago. You on our team. I forgot who we traded you for. I think Wayne Brady or something. Nah, just playing Wayne Brady. That's my man.
That's my boy, Wayne, too. Hey, but, man, you know, I don't know. I some of it is like
Dawn Sterling. I just traded you for Dawn Sterling.
I don't know. I don't know how I should feel being it. You know, like I never cared. I never wanted to be a white rapper. I never wanted that. And then growing up in Texas, a lot of times people thought I was, especially with a low Hispanic, haircut fade, yeah. they'd like, oh, he Hispanic or he mixed or he Frenchman from Louisiana. Right. They was one of the three.
Wait, a Frenchman?
Yeah, like Creole.
Yeah, like Creole.
Oh,
yeah.
Shit. But they called him Frenchman? I've never heard of that.
That's where Creole
is. That's kind of hard.
Yeah, used to be friends, to actually.
I want to be a Frenchman, nigga. I want to be a Frenchman, nigga. That's the name of my next mixtape, Frenchman.
I think some of that, too, being on the Switch House mixtapes, my voice is slowed. It's pre-internet, so you can't Google what somebody look like. Mm. So you didn't know what I look like. You hear my music. It's already slowed down, so it's already got effects on it. So you really didn't know what I look like. And then I think sometimes people make excuses up like that just because to get me past, like, oh, no, he ain't white. He got to be Mexican. No.
Right.
Because, man, it's funny, man. One time I was in Florida, I had a show at Star 6ix9ine, Roy Jones Jr. Club in Pensacola. Mm. And it was like one of my first shows, me and Camille in there, and I was at the bar before I'm about to go on. It was a sold-out show. It was, you know, because we was rocking it back then, just even on the mixtape. Sold-out show, and I'm just at the bar getting a drink. Somebody next to me say to his homeboy, hey, man, I wonder when Paul Wall going on, man. How long we got to wait till Paul Wall go on? I turned to him. I said, oh, what's up, bro? I'm going to go on like 15, 20 minutes. He looking me up and down my head like he about to steal off on me. I'm like, okay, oh, you know, I'm like, oh, whatever. Oh, you know, all right, that's what's up. And then I left. I'm like, whatever. Then after the show, he came up to me. He was like, damn, I didn't know that was you. I mean, and he just straight up told me, he's like, man, I don't mean no offense, but I hate white people, man. He told me, he said, I hate white people. He said, but really, you my favorite rapper. So when you told me that at the bar, I'm like, who the fuck is that? And I'm like, he
found out you were white right then?
Right then when I come on stage. So he told me, man, I'm torn between two worlds right now. Do I like you because you're my favorite rapper, or do I hate you because you're white? And then, you know, I'll just, but that's a funny shit. So whoever that was, man, if you still out there, man, hey, much love to you. I give you a discount on the grill or something.
That's some funny shit.
But I, you know, some of it too, man. I just personally think back. I think because sometimes I see white rappers and they'll come to me for, like, man, a lot of times, man. All the time, white rappers come to me for advice on different things. You know, rappers always come to me, you know, right.
They come to me to say, "How do I be a white rapper?" I don't imagine did they say that.
In so many words, you know, I'll get asked some questions that'll be, I'll think, how could you ask somebody that, or how could you even think that, like, you know, my advice to anybody, you want somebody like you, just be real, be yourself, because if they don't like you for being fake,
it's easy to be you.
Yeah.
It's easy to be you.
I mean, but it's funny sometimes, but at the same time, I don't know, because growing up, I had friends of all races. For sure, most of my friends were black. But I had Asian friends too. Had a lot of Mexican friends or Hispanic. I had friends that were other Dominican, other things too. Right. Not just Mexican, but Guatemalan. Right. You know. So, but for sure, most of my friends were for sure black. I had some white friends, but the white boys in my neighborhood were the ones that were beating me up, bullying me. Wow. So it was shit. Wow. It was that's just how it was for me. That Chameleon era, like, I grew up Chameleon my whole life. So me and them were friends. You know. Since kindergarten, damn near, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, not only him, but all our friends from that area, we all, you know, came up together. We are very similar in everything we do, you know what I'm saying? Right. But, and we all had friends of all races, but being white, it's sometimes like, you know, when they don't have me on the list, it'd be funny, like, shit. Yeah. Then at the same time, we're like, well, I don't want to be seen as a white rapper or none of that. I just want people to see me for being dope or whatever. But definitely, you know, being white, being dope for a white rapper, or being dope, you dope for such and such, you dope for a girl.
You do that to the Puerto Ricans too, to the Spanish. Yeah. They be like, he's dope for a Spanish artist. Yeah. So I relate to.
Yeah, it's, you know, I mean, it's good to be appreciated. Be considered dope, but it's also, you could be dope not just for one aspect and characteristic. Dope,
Now, have you ever had a beef? I'm looking at you and I'm thinking, like, you know, you're always been positive. So I'm thinking, like I know you and Chameleon there, but y'all beefed for a little while. But like,
It wasn't lyrical. It was more like just personal. Right. But with him, it was real. It was personal because we were best friends, and then we took separate paths. And you know, but it's very great. Shout out to Pimp C, man. Pimp C he's a huge reason why we reconciled. He talked to us individually, y'all tripping. I also shout out to E-40.
What was the beef?
That's crazy.
The two biggest people, it was, you know, I mean, some of it is like not worth talking about because right. it's, you know,
personal
bringing
shit.
Up old shit. Yeah. But, right. you know, it's just we had different views on certain things or, you know, sometimes money might have been involved or whatever. We just, it was meant for us to take separate paths. So when right. it was meant for that to happen, that happened. And, thankfully, we kept it off wax. So that, you know what I'm saying, you know, some of them disses, you go back, even when you cool, you like, damn, that motherfucker said that about me, God damn. You know, so, you know, it's like, man, you know, we thank God, we thankfully we kept it off wax, but E-40 was the first one to say, man, y'all tripping. You know how much money y'all can make, and by the time you realize it, that opportunity is going to be gone. Mm. Nobody going to care no more. Or they're going to be on to the next or something. Like, E-40 used to always tell us, man, y'all because E-40 fucked with both of us. He gave us both advice. We was cool anyway. We was friends. But he was like E-40 for sure was a big mentor in the game. But specifically, man, you and Chameleon are tripping. Then when Pimp C said it, too, it's like,
yeah, got damn. Two legends talking to y'all.
Right. And then Pimp C, like, he spoke individually to both of us. Man, what's up with you and Chameleon now, man? What's the problem? Okay. You tripping. He tripping too. Fuck that. Y'all tripping. There's money out there. Y'all could be making all this money. Y'all ain't got to get along. This him and E-40, I don't know if they talked before they talked to us, but they both told us the same shit. Yeah. You know, it's like, man. And then when he put us in the song, Knocking Doors Down, he shot us out. Then even before that, you know, the public will come, hey, what's up with you and Kamina? What's up with you and Kamina? What's up with you and Kamina? It's cool, whatever. Then eventually sometimes people will... the public will die down, like, oh, they'll be like, oh, it's a touchy subject. Let's don't ask them about that. Even when it ain't a touchy subject no more, still they be like, oh, I don't respect, I don't want to ask you about this or that. You know, but then, you know, when Pimp C put us in the verse, everybody
what did
like,
he say in that verse?
He
what
said, Pow Wow, that comedian still ain't talking. Money speak, all that bullshit, keep walking. Mm. He basically called out all the Houston rappers saying, y'all tripping with each other. We beefing, we need to come together. But he say, when he said that, then all the public, hey, what Pimp C say? Damn, man, what y'all gonna do? Damn. And everybody, like, it's like, it made it cool to come talk to us about it. And then it really forced us to come together. And then especially when Pimp C passed away, right. It was like, hey, we got to do this for Pimp C, man. You know, it's for Pimp C, you know, for sure. He was a huge reason why we came back together, Squad Style B.
And when you used to write Pimp C letters in jail, you wasn't Paul Wall
pal,
yet?
Man. Yeah, my pimp pal.
You wasn't MC yet?
I was. That was kind of like, it was like during my ascension, you know what I'm saying? And then there's different levels. There's, you know, you could be a one-hit wonder. You could be an underground mixtape, you know, person. Once you get on the radio, it's different. Once you're on TV and the magazines, it's real different. And it's an era before the internet, before smartphones and shit. Right. So, you know, you couldn't find out about other artists unless it was put in front of your face.
Right.
You know, unless you go to that city and go to a record store, right. You know, shit, the only way you hear it is if they play it on the radio, which is somebody else controlling, or they play it on TV, which is somebody else controlling, or that's it. Shit, you know, it's tough to hear
so
about
you,
other people.
You guys' address and just said, fuck it, let me.
I got his address, Rotones, man, big bro, what it do? Shit, big fan, of course. And at that time, too, you know, I was already making a name for myself with Swish House. And then some of it, too, is, you know, when you say somebody, hey, a free Pimp C, you say it on a rap, you know, you ain't trying to be, like, false claiming saying that, you know. Some of it is
shit.
Yeah, you know, and some of it is people, they reach like a motherfucker. So it's like, if I don't know him, it's better to say, man, I ain't never met Pimp C, but free him, I love him. Right, but if you act like, oh, that's my boy, Pimp C, free Pimp C, but you ain't never even met him, it's like, well, you faking like a motherfucker. So, you know, some of that, too, is, how can I represent, hold it down for him out here while he locked up and communicate with him so that I can represent, you know, not like I'm speaking for him and spokesperson or nothing like that, but just at least to communicate, let him know that we holding it down for you out here. If you need something from any of us, whatever whatever here. And it's, you know, it's funny, you know, the type of advice he would give me would be like, we're messing with girls on the road. Hey, make sure you strap up, them hoes dirty, you know, shit like that. They scammers. Hey, don't leave your money out in your pockets. They gonna go through your pockets when you were taking a shower. Watch out, you know, shit like that. Like, but that's real talk. Like, shit, you know, I ain't had to lose a Rolex to learn that lesson. You know what I'm saying? Shit, he taught me. He for sure, man.
Yeah, I'm not a smoker, but are you smoking without smoking? I feel like the way he's lighting it, smoke just hit him.
I smoke backwards, and these papers they not lighting up. These, you gotta, I'm for sure. That's why I said, man.
I feel like it's a new shit. Like you just light it, and the smoke just hits you.
Nah, I'm for sure, big smoke.
I'm gonna take it to the face. Yeah. I was like, damn, he's killing it with that shit.
That shit ain't lighting up.
Now, what the fuck did Chameleon there invest in that now they?
Yo,
Chameleon
is the man.
Yeah, what did he invest in?
I don't know, but put your boy down, man. Let me get in on it.
Word. We need a drink chance. We need financial advice from him. Yo,
somebody told me he invested in Lyft. Somebody told me
tech shit for sure.
Yeah, somebody told me he's with a hedge fund or something. That's, you know, anytime I talk to him about it, he's telling me he's doing something involving a hedge fund.
What the fuck is hedge fund?
Hedge fund, they invest in bad shit.
Fucking like, no.
Yeah, they take your money and they invest in a bunch of shit.
Yeah. But what he doing? I don't know. I'm want to get in on it though.
Yeah.
But shit, I don't know what he doing, but it's working for him. And he always tell me, man, I ain't retired, but what am I gonna do it for other than for the love? So he'll still do verses like he did a verse for me on Swangin' in the Rain remix. Anytime I ever asked him to do a verse for me, he always did it. And, you know, but for sure, you know.
How did y'all fix the beef? I'm sorry, I'm bouncing all over the place.
A lot of it is. You just gotta let it go. If we bring it up and talk about it, we're gonna fight, we're gonna argue, we got different opinions, perspective. Yeah. We might both be right on whatever we're saying, but a lot of it is, hey, we went through what we went through, this the past God led us on. Now we here, what we gonna do about it? We gonna go forward with this, be positive about this, or we gonna, you know, and then some of it too is taking the responsibility of publicly beefing with someone else from your city like that. Like, you know, it just sends more of a message that this is how to make it. Like, people think, if I troll you, you'll respond. Because if I compliment you, you're not going to respond. Mm. And whatever they can do to get a response is cool. Because no one's, they getting overlooked. So it's whatever they can do to get some type of attention. So I don't know, you know, I think a lot of it is just letting shit go. And, you know, appreciating the fact that God took us, like I say, brought us through things to make us who we are. And, you know, I apologize for my wrong. He apologized for whatever. Even if we ain't wrong, we sorry, man. Let's make this work. And then shit go from there.
Where was you at when you found out Bushwick Bill passed away? Because I know he had to be a legend to you as well.
Man, I got a couple crazy stories about Bushwick Bill just in dealing with him, man. I got a man.
I heard he's a tough nigga.
Yeah, he's a gangster. He was, man. He
and
he's
smart
no bullshit.
Motherfucker, too.
I remember I met him. I was like 12 years old. This is like the first time I ever flew on a plane. It was in the airport around like 1 o'clock, I don't know, 2 o'clock noon. I only remember this because I met Bushwick Bill, and it was the first time I ever flew.
Right.
You know, so I'm a kid, so I'm like, I remember a lot of that, you know. Right. And so anyway, I'm in Houston Airport, Hobby Airport. Some of this, too, I know from fact-checking with my mom. Hey, mama, where was that? Oh, that was Hobby. Yeah, I remember that. She remembers. She knew Bushwick Bill there, too. So anyway, I see him in the... I'm walking. I'm a kid. My mama doing something. I'm 12 years old, so I'm, you know, almost a teenager. I see him sitting there with a bunch of luggage around him in like a lounge area of a restaurant, just like, you know, restaurant, whatever. Just sitting there with a bunch of luggage. He knocked out. Off top, I recognize him, but he's by himself. I'm like, that's Bushwick Bill. Why he ain't got all security? Rap-A-Lot mob with him. Everybody like, why he by himself? I'm like, damn, should I go talk to him? Can I talk to him, man? What's up? So I just said, fuck it, I'm going to go talk to him. He knocked out, passed out in a chair. And I just go up to him, shake his, tap him on his arm. You know, I look back, and I had the opportunity to tell him this story, too, before he passed away. You know, you know, looking back, I realized, man, you know, I'm a kid. I ain't know. People need their space. You know, I'm like, damn, I was mad disrespectful. Like, coming up to him, waking him up out of sleep. Talking to him, like, but anyway, I didn't talk, and he like, oh, what's up? He wake up, get up, I'm like, well, what's going on? And I'm like, hey, what's up, man? You Bushwick Bill? He's like, yeah, man, that's what's up. Nice to meet you, man. And I'm just asking him, like, kid questions.
And you
like,
ain't even asked for Instagram flicker. None of that.
This was before all that. I'm telling you. But Sean, like, damn. I think I might have did get his autograph, and if I did, I still have it, because I got Big Boy's autograph, too. One time I got a story, I'll tell you that next. But yeah.
Big Boy.
But anyway, I'm a big fan of hip hop, especially back then. If someone would come to a concert, it could be somebody I never heard of, and I'll go. Yeah, I'm too young just to see what they look like walking in the club or whatever, or see if I can meet them, or even if I ain't never heard of them, just because it was hip hop to me. It was dope. But anyway, Bushwick Bill, I started talking to him, and I'm like, you know, whatever, having a kid conversation. Eventually, I realized, like, I'm kind of tripping right now, man. And I'm thinking, eventually people going to come back, and they're going to be like, what the fuck you doing? Talk, you know, you got to go. So I was like, damn. All right, Bushwick, man, I'm going to holler at you. And I left, you know, and that was that. And, then when I worked, you know, and it was just a great positive interaction. But I thought that's how all rappers were. Cool as fuck. Like, they want to talk to you, whatever. They wake up out your sleep to talk to you. So then I go to the, later on in life when I'm working for Def Jam, it was an artist that I'm promoting hard as fuck for, bringing his records to the DJs, putting his posters up, passing his flyers out. He come to town. I try to holler at him thinking he going to be Bushwick, cool as fuck, thinking he know what I'm doing for him. He was rude as fuck. Like, man, it was a complete opposite interaction as was Bushwick. And it was like, damn, you don't know I'm working my ass off for you. You going to treat me like that?
What artist is this?
He ain't even rapping. I don't even remember who it was. I'm sure if I go back to whatever year it was, I can think back to and X off the list. It wasn't him. Yeah, it was him. But whoever it is, he ain't rapping no more. But then that led me to be the people's champ because I'm like, I want to be like Bushwick. I want my interaction to be positive when someone walk away from seeing me. They like, damn, they got a smile on their face. And they're like, man, I'm at Paul Wall. That's real. Damn, he cool as fuck. I don't want it to be, man, fuck him. I ain't never listening to his music again. I should have stole off on him. Damn, man, I'm going to go at him on a song. Like, that's how people be. Like, you shit on people like that. So I'm like, man, I want to be more like Bushwick. Now, let me tell you when I met Big Boy. It was like a few years later, maybe like, I might have been.
But you're still a kid.
I was still a kid.
Okay, continue.
I might have been like, I might have been like 16, 17. So it was around the same time as I was working for Def Jam. Me and Camille in there, it was like, well, we was just old enough to drive, but we ain't had no car. Mm. So they had a concert come through Houston, and it was Outkast, I believe it was Erykah Badu, and it was The Roots. And Cypress Hill, I believe.
That sounds crazy.
Yeah, it was shit. It was crazy. But it was at the time when all of them were new artists, too. So it was like Questlove opened up. The Roots. Because I met Questlove there, too. He was cool as fuck, too. He just standing at the, one of the, booths. And I'm going up to him like, oh, shit, that was you on stage? Yeah. He talking like, damn, man, that's crazy. That's what's up. And I'm going back, me and Kamin. Okay, me and Kamin was at the show. We're sitting at the... it's the Cynthia Mitchell Woodlands Pavilion, where it's an outdoor pavilion. They got a lot of these all around the country. Not the same name, but they got these type of venues where they got, like, front row seating, and then they got, like, lawn seating in the back, grass seating. Okay, so it'd be like a chair seating, and then it was a walkway, and then it was, like, a six-foot-up chaired seating. So me and Camille, then behind that was all the grass. Okay, so me and Camille are sitting in the front row of the back chairs. So where the walkway is in front of us, we about like 6 feet up, 8 feet up, but we at the edge front row, so people walking. So Outkast perform, they get off stage, and they walk through. I see Big Boy walking, and I'm like, he walking with two security guards. I'm like, oh, shit, come in, there go Big Boy. Damn, what's up, man? We got to stop. And he's like, well, what are we going to do? We way up here, what are we going to do? We going to go race him down? And also... Me and Kamina are very different in these perspectives. Kamina has more of a Houston mind frame when it comes to celebrities, especially rappers, and this is the mind frame. I ain't finna be on his dick. I like him, but I'm not finna ride his nuts. So that's like, shit, the Houston mind frame, it'd be a sold-out show, everybody mean mugging you. But they love you, but they just mean, they don't want you to know they love you because they don't want to be embarrassed or so, you know, or they don't, whatever, they don't want you thinking they on their nuts. So I'm more of a... Man, I love that person. Let me go tell them I love them. You know, Kamin's like, yeah, I love them too, but I ain't gonna be on the next. So we sitting there and we like just sitting on the front row. Big Boy walk. I'm like, man, Kamin, the Big Boy, or whatever, you know, whatever shit. Man, I said, fuck it, I gotta go. I gotta say what's up. I just hop down, jump over the thing, just like I'm running from the cops, jump over the fence. I hop down, jump down about 6-8 feet. I land, chase him down. Him and his bodyguards was like, whoa, whoa, what's going on, what's going on? I'm still like somewhat of a kid. You could tell I was like 15, 16, so I might have looked adultish. You know, I might have had like a little baby whisker mustache, but you could still tell I'm young. Like, I ain't finna come up, like, fight him or nothing like that. And they like, whoa, what's going on? I'm like, man, oh, Big Boy, man, I'm a fan. Well, you know, can you sign something? He signed something for me. I still got that
that autograph to this day, too. I would collect things like that. Like, that's what I'm saying. I can't remember specifically. Now, you know, I for sure got to go back and tell Bushwick. I mean, I got to go see if I got that Bushwick autograph. I think I still do, because I think it was on, like, a napkin. Anyway, I know Big Boy signed the actual ticket. I still got that. But anyway, that was my Big Boy story. But going back to Bushwick, when I saw Bushwick, I mean, later on, and I see him all the time. Like, I would see him at shows. We would, you know, sometimes we'd perform together, and we'd be kicking it backstage, chopping it up. He also has a son I connected with for a while. Me and him was always real cool. We still, you know, still are, but, like, for over the years, you know what I'm saying? Right. So I got to know him and his son, you know, whatever, through the years. But more recently, when it came out that, you know, he had stage 4 pancreatic cancer, that was kind of like where, you know, they kind of did, like, a kind of call to action. You know, you fuck with Bushwick, kind of let them know, because the clock kind of ticking. You know what I'm saying? Right. So it was like one of them things where, you know, I was, you know, I for sure reached out just to tell them, man, how much, you know, I appreciate them, you know, whatever, I love for them. And we always, you know, always had a great connection over the years. But then he told me, he was like, hey, I'm working on an album. It's going to be basically my last solo album, you know, whatever. You know, you don't really want to say it like that at the time, but that's kind of like how he was saying it. Like, you know, I'm doing another solo album. It's basically gonna be my, you know, is it, you know, you down to get on it? Of course I'm gonna get on it. Shit, right. I'm a professional rapper, and it's an icon, legend, somebody I look up to, inspire me from my very first interaction with a rapper, of him, me wanting to be like him, to be a people's champ. So, hell, of course I'm gonna get on that. So, you know, I went to the studio with him, got to kick, you know, chop it up with him. And really, you know, I did my verse. It was cool. That was, you know, we actually did 2 songs. But, you know, I'm kind of quick in the studio, so I did my thing. That's cool. But after that, we just chopping it up for hours upon hours, you know. And like I said, you know, he's somebody I've known throughout the years, but we backstage at a concert. So we still might be chopping it up for a couple hours, you know, before getting ready to go on. But it's a group setting kind of, you know, where it's a party atmosphere. So this, like, real intimate one, you know, just me, him, you know, his son, a couple other people, the engineer, a couple other people, you know, we just in there just chopping it up, talking about all kind of shit. And I got to tell him, you know, I before I went to the studio, I told my mama, I said, mama, guess who I'm going to the studio with? Who? Bushwick Bill. No, man, for real. You remember when you met him in the airport? I'm like, yeah, that's what I'm calling him. I'm telling you. I'm like, man, when? I'm trying to figure out, get like a real, when was that? You remember when that was? She kind of tell me when it was. Oh, that's when we did this and that. That's the first time you flew. I kind of, you know, so it kind of, you know, we remember that kind of thing. So when I told Bush, I said, Bushwick, I'm going to tell you a story, man. I tell him a story. Shout out to Bushwick, man. Right. I tell him a story. He say, I said, Bushwick, I met you when I was 12. He say, all the way there, I tell him a whole story. He say, oh, yeah, that was the Resurrection Tour or whatever tour. Yeah, it was in Hobby Airport. Yeah, in the summer. Yeah, I remember that. He said, were you wearing summer clothes? And I'm like, damn, man, they don't even remember that. But he said, yeah, you were wearing, I remember. He said, I don't know if that was you, but I remember meeting the youth in the airport wearing summer clothes. You know, was that you? I'm like, man, you remember that? That's crazy. But nah, I don't know if he really did remember that or he was just kind of putting on. But still, you know, I'm glad I got to share that with him to let him know how much, you know, he's.
Don't ever make fun of my Karis One ball.
Well, hold on. Let's all give him a moment of silence, y'all. Rest in peace, Bushwick Bill. Definitely. Now most people I see with grills, when they smoke or they eat, they take the grills off. You don't take the grill off when you smoke or eat?
I mean, when you're on the jury store, I get to cheat, you know what I'm saying? Right. I got the jury store, so it ain't nothing.
So why do people do that? What is it? Mess it up or something?
Well, think about it. You got, you know, your chain right there. Mm-hmm. If you got to eat, let's get, you know, we getting lasagna.
Right.
You ain't gonna dip it in with lasagna.
Exactly.
And then you gotta, let me get a coffee, dip it in a coffee. Let me get a milkshake, dip it in a milkshake. Let me eat a hamburger or whatever. Let me, whatever, you know. So it's like, you think about it, you wouldn't do that with that. It's grills, it's your teeth, but it's still precious metal and jewels. So, you know, you gotta, some of it comes with, especially the smoking, it will tarnish the metal, make it, you know, change the color a little bit. But when you buff it out, it's brand new, back to new. And then different qualities of the gold will get dirty quicker. Same with the diamonds, you know. So when you got a higher carat gold, you can smoke. It's not a big deal. But, you know, it's just proper grill care. I don't, whatever. I don't really tend to take my grill out too much. You know, I'm actually about to get some. I'm about to go permanent on there. And get something new. I'm
permanent. You said,
yeah. I'm gonna
those are obviously those are the ones that don't come out.
Yeah.
So is there a difference between regular gold and dental gold?
Well, the dental gold, I think when they say that, they mean like a higher quality of the carat of gold. So typically, there's like 10 karat gold, 14 karat gold, 18 karat gold. Now there's 22 karat gold sometimes, 24 karat gold. Bruno Mars made a song about it. So, but when you go to buy jewelry, it's typically 10 karat, 14 karat, or 18 karat. 18 karat being the higher karat being the best. But also, it's boys whipping that gold up, man. Boys will whip that gold up with silver or some other things. You test
it. Wait, what do you mean? I don't understand.
It'll be 6 karat gold.
Oh.
Or whatever, and they'll dip it to look like 18 karat or dip it. I actually got a song called with Zaytoven called 18 karat gold, no dip, because boys will get 10 karat and then dip it to look like 18 karat or 14 karat gold.
Holy shit, I ain't know that.
Yeah, but
I ain't know that.
Yeah, it's but I think you know, I don't know, I could be wrong, but I think when with the dental gold, what they mean is a 22 karat or the higher karat, but which is usually I think 18 karat. All the dentists I know use the 18 karat. Shit, we do the golds for all the dentists and it's 18 karat. But that's actually how Johnny started with the grills. Was he was already doing jewelry repair, already doing a few custom things like for jewelry stores, not for customers, but for jewelry stores. So then it got to be the dentist would come to, hey, I'm making, you know, I need you to make these gold teeth for a customer who's getting them permanent. And then Johnny like, damn, I could do that on my own. They can come to me. Why are they going to you? They can come straight to me. Shit, and then that's basically what it was.
What was the first order like? Because obviously you was a rapper, so this was your side hustle, the grills, right?
It was around the same time, you know. I first started rapping with the Swisher House. My first mixtape with the Swisher House was in 1999. Before that, I was rapping with Kamina, doing talent shows or whatever, just trying to make it. But you know, basically, wasn't no rap career.
What was the first order with you and John where you was like, you know what, I can make some money off of this shit? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I actually...
Well, this one I'm doing, I was working for Crime where I worked
at... the other jewelry team guy.
Yeah, I was working for him, and it was at a store where we sold Swisher House tape. It was like a hood store. Uh-huh. Like, you know, like a bodega kind of, but we don't call it that. It was just like just a store, corner store, where we sold Swisher House mixtapes. We sold hood t-shirts that'll just have the name of your hood type shit on there, North Side or whatever, just type of sayings type of shit on there. And we've been there selling grills, selling gold tea. But after a while, you know, as shit started picking up, it was like, okay, I gotta move out of here. I gotta, you know, I can get money in other ways. But originally I started out working for Crime doing the promotions. That's the first time where I actually ran a grill shop. And then even then, it was still working for Crime. He paid me a salary, and I would sell grills, and I was a salesman, but he did everything. He took care of everything. And then eventually, he was like, hey, look, I'm going to do something for you, man. I'm going to introduce you to Johnny, man. And he was like, all right. I was like, bet. Shit. And he basically gave...
Was Johnny making it for him?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
But Crime had different people, too. Crime had somebody in New York that was making them. He had somebody... And you know, but Johnny did the majority because it was local in Houston. But he had multiple. He got all kinds of stuff going on.
But it wasn't like a celebrity who came to you and like, and then you was like, you know what, this is something I'm gonna invest my money in.
Well, I think it was just it was more like just a hustle because Lil Jon was the first celebrity I did, but before that it was just. Oh, I was making money, man. I was making all kind of money selling grills. And I would the hustle is you pass out flyers with your number on it, with the prices on it, and people will see it. You go to all the different cities or towns that in a 3-4 mile radius or 3-4 hour radius. You know what I'm saying? So I would go to Dallas, San Antonio, Austin, the same places I'm going to sell Swisher House tapes. Because keep this in mind, too. I was selling Swisher House mixtapes before I was rapping on them. I was promoting and distributing. I would press up the CDs and the tapes, and I also would distribute them and go to the stores, fulfill the orders, take them back to Watts or Ron C or G-Dash. That's what T. Ferris was doing, too. We came in at the same time doing that before I was rapping with the Swisher House. So I got to seeing, well, shit, the same grill hustle in Houston, I can do this out of town. So I go to Dallas, all these places, put my number down with flyers with the prices. They already were traveling to Houston or places to get grills or to whatever, whoever they local hood dentist. But it ain't a good selection of people to go to. It's only like one or two or maybe three in Houston at that time they were doing permanent grills that were like hood dentists like doing that. So it's like, shit, where can you go? So, doing that, it would just work. And then I would go to Louisiana, same thing. Lafayette, Lake Charles, Opelousas, on the Baton Rouge, and then even every direction, you know what I'm saying? So it got to be a real hustle for me. But Lil Jon saw it and was like, he knew who I was DJing. DJing, and I was an artist, which I was a freestyle artist, but a lot of people, you know, I kind of got more recognition as a DJ at that time. At that time, from other
DJ
artists.
Name? DJ Paul Wall?
DJ Paul Wall. Okay. The other artists, I think a lot of, they more respected me as a DJ because I wasn't hounding them for verses and let me act like I'm friends with you and all that. It was more like, I'm a DJ, I play your music. They respected me for that because I really will support people I fuck with.
Okay.
And whereas the fans fucked with me as being a rapper, they didn't give a fuck about me DJing. The fans fucked with me as being a rapper. But the other artists, they fucked with me as being more DJ. So it was a lot of other, the artists I fuck with T.I. real tough, real heavy. You know, even as I was rapping with the Swisher House and, you know, when 24s came out and, you know, all around then. But it was more as me being a DJ. And then as the artist thing came, it was like, oh, shit, you rap too? I didn't know you rap. And then it worked for me because I saw how people, you know, man, everybody is a rapper or a DJ or a producer.
Yeah.
Everybody. So everybody who's seen any type of success, and there's all type of different levels, you get everybody coming up to you. Hey, I want to be where you at. How can I be there? How can you put me on? Put me on. Put me on. Put me on. So shit, I would just see how you would get turned off, shut out as I'm a rapper. Hey, put me on. Put me on. And they don't want to fuck with you. But shit, I'm a DJ. I'm a DJ. I can play your music. Then you can play my music. Shit, let me fuck with you. Shit, it just was like reverse psychology. And then when they would find out that I rapped, it would be, damn, you ain't even tell me you rap. But it would be like, yeah, because I ain't trying to put you out like that where you ain't want to fuck with me no more because, you know, you see how I go. So it worked for me. You know what I'm saying? I let my other side hustles, you know, grow so that when I had an opportunity for me to be an artist or a rapper, you know, I had all kind of money-wise, monetarily, I had my money, so I didn't rely on record sales. My network was already strong because I was already distributing other people's music, and I was a salesman selling grills and selling music, so I knew to sell my own music, being an artist, what it kind of took. I knew being a salesman who distributed the Swisher House tapes, sometimes I could tell which, you know, what the fans, they fuck with this artist or that artist, so they like when you say this or that.
You're on your A&R and shit.
Right. So, I could adjust. Like, okay, they like when I do that.
You and Johnny is partners on the whole jewelry store or just the grill part?
On all of it.
On all of it? Yeah. Oh, okay. Goddamn. So you damn near got your own jewelry store. Damn near. Jesus.
We branching out. We about to branch off. We still got the Sharpstown store, of course. We got the new one, 6224 Richmond in Houston, the big one, the two-story. Johnny got his own. Johnny went from doing jewelry repair in his garage to selling grills in the mall to having his own mall, man. So, it's definitely.
How does one, if somebody wanted to start getting in the jewelry business, how do you even begin?
This is why I love Johnny, bro. He changed my life as me being a hustler. I could sell anything. I could hustle anything. So when you got that type of skill, you know, how can you do that without going to jail? How can you do that with integrity and respect where you're not selling something that's whack or corny? Or how can you do that and make a career out of it? How can you do that? You know, just all of that. So for me, it was a whole lot of, you know, I love grills. I want grills, so I want to sell them. Then I can make a lot of money off of this because a lot of people at the time who were selling grills were charging too much money or were doing bad business where they take your money in your grill, mold, but you wouldn't get your grill. And you got to hound them for their grill, you know. So I just saw myself as, man, if I can do a good business, I'm going to win. And Johnny gave me that opportunity. That's what Johnny started off as. He would give wholesale other jewelers.
Well, did you fund him first? How did, you know what I'm saying? Like,
No, Johnny. It was all Johnny. Okay, so me, I would, when I'm working for crime, doing grills, selling grill molds, whatever, doing anything I'm doing with crime, I would be like the driver drop off the most. So I'm at Johnny's dropping off the most, picking up orders, things like that. I'd be in there, and it was a small shop. And every time I ever went in there, he would always be getting into somebody. He got this thick Vietnamese accent, and it'd be somebody who was from the hood of any race. They was from some type of hood, so they had a hood accent, or they was from out of state, so he ain't know what the fuck they was saying. They ain't know what the fuck he was saying. Right. And it would just be a translation. Oh, no, no, all he's saying is this. Oh, no, no, Johnny, he want this. No, he want this. And then, you know, after that, eventually it got to be a, hey, you Paul Wall? While I'm in there dropping off grill molds and shit, people say, hey, you Paul Wall? And John like, I saw they know you. Oh, I'm a rapper too. And he's like, you a rapper? And you sell grills, whatever? And I'm like, yeah, well, you know, it's a hustle, whatever shit. And then it got to be a, shit, we can do this together, and we way stronger together. And Johnny always from the jump. Johnny got a part of my music too, just like I got a part of the Jewelry Store. Johnny told me from the jump, man, hey, look, the same way you love jewelry, that's how I love music. I can't make no music. I don't know how to make music, but I want to be a part somehow. Whether it's doing concerts, you know, just investing, something, I want to be a part. So that's why we always had kind of meshed the way we have. The jury is his thing. I do the marketing. I do things like that in terms of the marketing outreach. A big part of what I do is customer service. When people in this problems, of course, that's when people don't really call me unless they got a problem. And they got a problem, of course, we're going to smooth it over. That's our thing, too, is that, you know, customer service is number one to us. But the business run itself, he run it, so I'm able to do my music and collect a check at the same time, cross-promote and everything I do. But it just was like a, why not? We got to team up. Let's do this together. And me, I'm a very loyal person, so I'm not the type to, let me do this on my own without you, to X you out so that I can make a little bit more money. Mm-hmm. I'm more of a, let's build this up together. You got kids, I got kids. We'll pass this on to our kids together. You know, I'm more of a builder than I am of a let me go do it on my own nomad style.
Even Charlie, you got your grills? Let's see what the quality of those grills are.
Yes, sir.
Where'd you get those grills, Charlie?
Yeah. Hey, but this why I love Johnny, because. It might, you looking good, you shining. Hey, but this is why I love Johnny, because the same opportunity he gave me to go hustle and make a living and make money off of this, man, he get that to, we got thousands of wholesale clients around the world. So that, you know, instead of him franchising off and having a Johnny Dangan company in every city, there's like 10 Johnny Dangan company people who are getting their wholesale from us, but they're their own business. Wow. So
you're like empowering them.
I appreciate that he empowered you to be your own hustler, to build your own business for your kids. That's why I love Johnny, because he get an opportunity. I've seen him time and time and time again get that opportunity to.
Well, what's the first thing a person should do if they want to get into the jewelry business?
Well, I mean,
because you had Johnny, but
I would say this: no matter what, it's very easy to get tempted to run off of people money or charge them more and get them, they paid $10,000, but let me act like they paid $9,000 or $8,000 because I need some new rims or something, you know. So I think good business and customer service is key. A1 key to long-term business. Now, if you want to go out and hit licks, come up real quick, that's a completely different business structure. You know, the business advice I can give you is for long-term careers or something you could pass on to your kids and make millions of dollars off of.
Yeah.
If you want to make a couple thousand real quick, you can go hit licks and burn people on their orders. But if you want to make some millions, you can't do that type of shit. But that's what, man, you know, real talk though, if you want to sell jewelry, the best advice I would give to you is if you, like, man, go talk to Johnny. We have a whole department, this a wholesale department. This is just as big as the gold casting or diamond setting or shipping or any other department we have. The wholesale department is huge, man. And that's also why we're able to sell 400 grills a day. You know, it's crazy to be able to do this much, but it's not because they...
I need another grill, goddammit.
Yeah, you know, we got you. You know, we got you, big bro.
But now, you was in a movie called You Hope They Serve Beer in Hell?
Oh, yeah, my boy Tucker Max. What's up?
How the hell you get involved in a movie like that, nigga?
Man, I'm not that good an actor, but I think that might be where it started. They put me in the movies that not the mainstream successes. But that was, they did make some money off of that. It's based off a book. My boy, it's a real person named Tucker Max. He got a book. It was on a New York Times bestseller for like 10 years, something crazy. Like, I think he might have broke a record or something. He was on, but the book is like a story he wrote, which is basically like adventures of getting fucked up and fucking girls and just reckless shit. Hey, I fucked three girls in one night and I ain't wear a condom. I got so drunk and I threw up all over the floor here and there. Hey, one time I had to shit and this girl gave me head while I was shitting. Like, it's like disgusting type of but it's all true stories and you know, of him. And I had to ask him, I was like, hey bro, these all can't be your stories. It gotta be like you and like four of your homeboys and you all put them together. But he like, well, it's just me. But anyway, I met him through somebody else. The first time I went to Iraq with the USO, I went with my boy Jamie Kennedy and Stu Stone. And Jamie Kennedy, you know, the actor, comedian, he had a book out. And Tucker Max, he's the one who wrote it. He, like, co-wrote it, you know what I'm saying? Mm. So anyway, he was talking to him, and he was like, oh, shit, hey, my boy Tucker Max, say, what's up, man? You know, he helped co-wrote my book. And I'm like, oh shit, tell him what's up. I'm trying to write a book too. Anyway, he wrote a bunch of books. He helped Tiffany Haddish write with her book. You know, I wasn't in on their writing problem. I don't know how they do it, but a lot of times when they write books like that, you'll like do an interview and then it'll be kind of transcribed, kind of or whatever. I don't know, but whatever. Anyway, but if you look on the book, the last black unicorn is like Tiffany Haddish, Tucker Max. So I'm like, oh shit, my boy. I seen that. I was wired up when I seen that. Wow. But yeah, that's how I met him. And I'm like, damn, he's like, yeah, I wrote a book. It's on a New York Times bestseller. But you know, he like co-wrote like a bunch of other books. So we got to be cool. And he like, hey, they gonna, and I told him, I was like, hey bro, I can't act for shit. I ain't been in but like three or four movies, but say, man, if you make because he said they gonna make a movie out of the book. I said, hey, bro, put me in the movie, man. I'm trying to get in that movie just because I'm trying to get a movie credit. So that's how it basically happened. He put me in the movie. He basically wrote me in the movie, which was like a parody of myself, kind of like my name in the movie was Grillionaire. Shout out to my boy. What's up?
Now you got a real. You married a real sister. You ain't married like a fake black girl.
Shout out
to
Chris Wall.
You married a real black. You have what has been like that? Because what has that life have been? Because obviously we know you white and you married a black girl. Like, has that been pluses for you? Have people critiqued you for it? Like,
you know, different people have different perspectives. You know, she's my dream woman. Anything I could ask for or could want in a partner is, you know, she that for me. So I don't want nothing else. I never been married to nobody else or nothing else like that. So I never even, you know, been. She really the first serious relationship that I had ever been in long term like that. Even we got married on our 2-year anniversary. So shit, I don't know. For me, you know, we get it different ways, of course. If you look at the comments on the post or something, you'll see all kind of shit sometimes. But I think, you know, if you racist, then you're going to find some racist out of it or whatever. Or, you know, there's definitely people on both sides who got a problem with it, you know what I'm saying, or whatever. But, hey, man, I wish them the best. I hope they be happy. You know, I'm happy. I'm proud to be married to her. This is what I wanted. Being my parents were divorced. Right. And, you know, this is what I wanted, man. I want to be married. Shit, I'm not trying to be like rapper married where I'm married, but I'm fucking on the side.
Right. You said rapper married. Yeah. That's hard. I caught it.
Or just entertainer married where you don't tell nobody you married. You know what I'm saying? Right, you know, hey, I'm, because even, you know, as a child growing up, if I want to think about what rappers, you know, from being whatever age I was when I first heard hip hop, who's married? Who talks about being married? Who's proud to be married or any of that? You don't hear none of that. Only thing you see is scandal, side bitches, baby mamas, dogging girls out, love songs, broken, you know, hey, that's different. The love spectrum or the interactive spectrum, you know, whatever, it's big, but you don't hear too much of, I'm married and, you know, shit like that.
Real
or,
shit.
You know, whatever. Or you just see people talking about it at all. And you'd be like, damn, I didn't even know they was married till you find out somebody got divorced. You know, damn, you got divorced? I didn't even know they was married. Shit, but, you know, so for me, it was like, who do I look to as a role model? To be, you know, to be married in entertainment or be a rapper that's married or interracial. I never really looked at any of it like any of that. But who do I look to for just to be a marriage role model, especially in rap music? You know what I'm saying? Like, shit, it wasn't a lot at the time. Now it's gotten to be more, you know what I'm saying? So, I, you know, it's a brotherhood, all the other married rappers, you know what I'm saying? And shit, it be, it's cool, you know
and
what I'm saying?
And parenting, too. Now people are more proud to talk about being parents.
For sure, man. That's something that it goes a long way in us. A lot of us, you know, like growing up having bad experiences or coming from a broken home or not having a father or having a father addicted to drugs, like, you know, all of them things was like, okay, who do I look to? You know, as a role model in rap as well. Like, shit, you know, it's something to be proud of, being a father. All of these things, to be married is something to be proud of. To be a father is something to be proud of. So it's something I try to do. You know, it's what I wanted. It's my dream. I wanted to be married, have kids, and be happy. Shit, I'm cool. I'm living my dream like a motherfucker.
Now, you went on tour with Tech N9ne.
Yeah, my boy.
Like, how and Ill Bill as well?
How
was that?
It was awesome.
Because Tech N9ne tore like a wrestler. Yeah, that nigga tore 394 days of the year.
We actually toured twice. Once we toured in like 2003, but it was just like, I think, four or five shows. It wasn't a whole lot.
Before probably the label has changed and stuff.
Yeah. Well, maybe like at the beginning
The beginning stages,
Even then, it was a weird experience showing up to the first show. It was, I think it was in Joplin. I don't know if it was the first. It was one of the first shows.
Was he painted in the face already?
Yeah, he was. I remember we did a show in Joplin, Missouri. And it was like, we pull up, and there's people waiting there. But they got on black trench coats. It's hot as fuck. They got on black trench coats.
Oh, his fans is crazy.
Yeah, they got their face painted. Right. And we like, man, what's going on? This ain't, we wasn't, something we wasn't used to when we go in the show.
The Jiggaboos, right?
No, yeah, the
Juggalos.
Yeah,
the Juggalos, the ICP. Yeah.
And we like,
but he got technicians. So
it was something we didn't know what to expect. And it was a dope interaction to see the combination of his fans and my fans. You know, because you can see some people were there for me, some people were there for him, some were there for both. But it for sure was a dope experience that first time we did the first shows. And that was my first interaction with Juggalos like that. And it was dope just seeing, you know, I thought that was so dope to have fans that, especially in hip-hop, bro, because being a fan is not cool. You can't be no fan. You a dick rider. It ain't no fan. It's you a dick rider.
Nah, so they real fans. You been to the gathering of the Juggalos? Yeah,
nah, I haven't been to the gathering.
I've been to two of them, and this shit is crazy.
Yeah they scared the shit out of me.
But it's dope to me to see people that are proud to be a fan of you, and if you don't like it, they ready to fight you.
Yeah.
That's how Zero is to me, his fan base. Zero has my boy Zero from Houston. He got a fan base where if his fans, if you talk bad about Zero, you say, man, they going to fight you right there on the spot. Yeah, man, you tripping. So, you know, they don't paint their faces, but they
it's
ready
to fight. It's true fanism,
And so, I was, happy to see that for sure when I experienced that. And that was the first time. And the second time we went on tour, it was like a 60-city tour. It was crazy. I'm like, man,
that motherfucker
60 shows back to back to back.
And he's reaping the benefits of it, too.
Yeah. But it taught me a grind like that. Like, damn, okay, I see the long-term grind of it.
He got everything on his
shit. He got mad real estate in Kansas City. Like, he's killing it.
Man, he pulled up in a Maybach.
Shout out to Strange Music.
When we went to Kansas City and we did a show, he said, I want to bring you by my compound and show you my studio. He pulled up in a Maybach. You know what I'm saying? He pull up to the multi-acre compound, and we get buzzed
they
in
got
by
car
security.
Washes in that motherfucker. Yeah.
And you see the back warehouse where they got their 100 or 50
they're like Costco
different sets from show sets. Like they, you know, you go to the other side where you see the warehouse with all of their merch over the years, everything from socks to jerseys, t-shirts. It's like, damn. Then you see the other side where they got the studio, they got the paperwork, everything. It's like, damn, that's the real independent. That's the dream right there. The way they got everything is just, it's very inspiring.
Big up to Tech N9ne. Big up to Tech N9ne.
Yeah.
Let's make some noise for Tech N9ne.
Tech N9ne, what a go. Hey, he be rapping his ass off too, man. He be rapping his ass off.
In 2011, you collaborated with a Silicon Valley based company, Jump Shot Media, to create a battle rap game. Is that still lit?
I don't know if it's still active right now. I think it's another one. I seen another one that Burner did.
Oh, yes,
it was but yeah, it was kind of dope. It was like, you know, this is the early stages of interactive apps type, you know, interactive type of things like that. But it's just dope to be a part of that. You know, growing up in Houston, I wasn't a part of the battle rap scene. So it was like, it was something that I wasn't.
So you think battle rap's eventually there's going to be like FaceTime? Like you could be in Seattle.
Yeah.
You could be in Seattle. I could be in Texas. And
it's
battle.
Like live streamed at the same time. So the fans
you know, some of it though is the doing it because the in the battle rap, you know, it's a performance.
Face to face.
Yeah, that face to face disrespect in your face in front of all your people. That's, you know, some of that is that because if I'm just in my room with all my homies, you know, you holding your nuts a lot. Yeah, I'm really holding my nuts, but if you face to face, it's like he might steal off on me right now. Right. So you know, it might you gotta be ready for all of that. It's people with anybody, you know, but that be what that battle rap is all about. But that also is why I never really personally got into that lane because man, if somebody talk about me like that, man, I'm gonna be ready to fight.
And it's spitting in your face too. Yeah, I can't do it.
You gotta do it.
I'm a fan of it, of watching it. And
that's it.
Yeah, shout out to my boy the Jacker. Rest in peace, the Jacker, man. He really got me on to watching. Hey, you seen this battle? Pulling up battles on YouTube. Hey, you seen this battle? Oh, he went in.
Jacker from Oakland?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. That was my boy. We actually we went on tour to Sweden. We did a festival over there. And it was a battle rap going on, like a battle rap concert going on. It was like
You named like 15 countries here, nigga. You be all over the world.
Yeah, I got a couple stamps. I got me a couple.
Travel agent. It's travel agent.
I got a couple stamps, man.
Yeah, but you're in Sweden. You was in Sweden.
Yeah, but that was my first time being at a battle rap live in person and seeing all of it, meeting these artists, seeing how they.
You
do
ain't
it
see them niggas that try to jump ASAP Rocky, did you?
I don't know, man. It was a few years ago when we was there. I thought about that though when I seen it. I'm like, damn, I wonder if it was they there when they. But they looked like it was a little younger.
So I just seen them niggas. I seen them niggas yesterday. Them two niggas. Yeah.
Saw them yesterday.
I seen them today. I'm back. We was leaving Estevan's kitchen. I said, them two niggas that trying to jump ASAP Rocky. I swear to God, in my mind. Yeah, but you listen, Paul. Well, we started this to big up our legends and tell people to their face that, you know, your grace. So many people in our culture, we don't salute our culture. And this is what we want to change. We want to change the narrative of that. So we started Drink Champs in order for us to give people their flowers where they can smell them. They thoughts when they can tell them, they drinks where they can drink them. You know what I'm saying? And they smokes where they can smoke them.
Smoke champs.
You know what I'm saying? And we want to tell you, man, you know, you've been out here, you know, representing hip hop in the right way, playing the game in the right way. And we want to tell you, we appreciate you. We want to tell you, salute. We want to tell you, man, keep doing your thing. I want to tell you, I'm ordering a new grill. I'm ordering my son a grill. And I'm ordering all three of my sons a grill. And, but, man, we want to tell you, thank you, man. Appreciate you, man. This is Drink Champs. And, man, give you your flowers right now.
Much love, big salute. Hey, man, anybody call Johnny, man, and get a grill with a hashtag or whatever. Tell him Drink Champ, give him that Drink Champ discount, man. We give you a 10% off top, baby.
Let's do that, goddammit. We're going to take a picture and a drop.